Coming Up Next Time podcast is brought to you in part by Built to Ride. Head over to builttoride.ca and pick up some coffee or apparel. Use the exclusive listener code COMEUP when you check out for an additional 20% off your order. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Barry Moore. First off, I'd just like to thank you for continuing to support me and apologize for the time away. Just needed to get some things done. So my next guest is a Southern Alberta boy who lives in Cochrane. He has an incredible story about surviving a handlebar through the leg. Traveling around the United States and Canada, offering up some encouraging words for those who live with disability and trying to encourage them to do more with what they've got. Coming up next, this is Devin Rochon. So that I don't forget, and then whatever. Like, I'll edit out all this part in the beginning. I just figured, yeah, if I don't hit record, I'm out of practice, I'll fuck up.
That's all good, dude. It's all good. How long have you been doing this now?
It's been a year, and so things went really well. Right off the hop, I had a bunch of good guests, creating some pretty good content, and then at the end of the day, the community sort of responded, and it's good. Like, I mean, numbers, my listening is down because I haven't put out a new episode all winter, but I'm sure that'll change pretty quick here.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
No, I would definitely humble. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Oh, no worries, man. Like, Matt Mays is a friend of mine. So we were just chatting, and then you sort of just came up, and then I was like, oh, hell, I wonder if that guy would be a good guest. And then Matt started telling me a whole bunch of stories. And then, you know, because
me and Matt Mays in our party days.
Yeah. You know, so we were just like, because he's just basically, we were just talking about accidents, like dirt bike accidents and things like that. And then whatever else came up in the end. And I was just like, holy fuck, that's even crazier than I thought. And so then I was happy that you were down for chatting.
It's funny actually that you reached out, because I've been out of it since 2014. My wife actually had an accident. It was kind of our snapping point, right? I was like, I'm done. It wasn't even my accident, it was hers.
Yeah.
But now I just got back into it. I just got a 2022 IZ250F for Blackfoot.
Nice.
And I had a couple of people reaching out and like, oh, I heard you getting back into it. And I was like, oh, wow, word travels fast.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was just saying, that you reached out to me. It was all coming together. I was like, oh, word really does travel fast.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if Matt pays attention to whether or not you're riding. I don't even think he knew you stopped. So, like, but yeah, I was just like pretty stoked. And then I went and checked out your Instagram, Off-Road Brigade, and
yeah,
it's like all mad trucks and shit. Like, you basically have like a Mad Max taco that's a little bit refined.
Yeah, it's I'm just like Jared, you know, that guy's gonna be the most humble dude as well. I listened to your guys' episode.
Oh yeah,
it was kind of the same thing, right? That, you know, you're just you're done. And, you know, you're just kind of, not almost burnt out, but you're just kind of over it. And then, you know, it's, for me, I missed it every day, riding.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to sell all my stuff. And I was like, well, you know, I'll hold on to some gear and hold on to that. And then, you know, when it comes to the trucks and stuff, it was kind of like a... I don't know if you'd call it like, we run on adrenaline, right? So when you're out off-roading, I guess, and you're out there exploring, it's definitely kind of the unknown aspect of it, but you definitely crave the harder line choices, or, you know, we're out there rock crawling and we're not looking to wreck stuff, but you're like, you know, trying to get that little bit of adrenaline rush.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, get really close to it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to adjust the volume here a little bit. Yeah. Like, where do you like to ride? Like, you're a Southern Alberta boy. And like, looking through your feed, I recognize some of the backgrounds. So where is it you like to ride? I mean, drive your truck, I guess we'll start there.
Yeah, so we definitely stay, you know, kind of close to the McLean Creek area. A lot of Whypress head down towards Livingston. We've lost so many trails throughout the years. Even out of Whypress, I'm sure you know, as obviously riding dirt bikes, that it's, you had all kinds of places to go, and now you're definitely limited. It's definitely the same for us. So we definitely see ourselves travel. We shouldn't say we see, or we definitely do a lot of traveling, you know, to the East Kootenays. We do a lot of trails and stuff like that in the wintertime, especially out in the Kootenays area. Okay. And around Fernie and stuff like that. But, you know, close to home, I'm in Cochrane. So, I mean, for me, McLean Creek is, you know, just a spit away. And same with Whypress. I mean, we definitely spend a lot of time down there in the river valley and enjoy the scenery, but it's pretty small time stuff, right? But it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I guess so, but you can get in a lot of trouble in those areas, small time or not.
Oh absolutely. Yeah, Mother Nature is a cruel mistress.
Yeah, she is indifferent as all get out. excuse me. So you traveled a lot. Like we spoke for a little while, or we spoke very briefly not too long ago. And one of the things you mentioned to me was that you do a lot of outreach and stuff down in the United States.
Yeah, I lived in California, basically down there in the wintertime, back up for the Nationals and for obviously the summertime. But I definitely try to reach out to as many you know, people as I could that were having issues, I would say. We hear a lot of people that, you know, I can't, or it's hard. A lot of people like to make excuses on, you know, I have this disability now, or, oh, you know, it's hard. Right. Yeah. And there's really no excuse. I mean, right, they always say that, you know, where there's a will, there's a way.
That's fair.
And definitely. When it comes to riding a motorcycle, that's gotta be the ultimate, you know, piece of freedom that you get. And I think that no one should have to miss out on it just because of a disability or just the wrong mindset. Right.
Yeah. 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 Like, yeah, 100%. Like, mindset is significant. Like, if you don't have a strong mind, I can't imagine just getting out in the backcountry on four wheels or two wheels. Like, you have to be sort of hungry for a bit of a challenge. And, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, obviously when you're riding and, you know, you're just having a good day and everything just flows nice, feels good. I don't really think there's too much, to that. I mean, I've definitely missed it for quite a few years, and I'm not like Jared or you guys. I'm a track guy. I'm not a fan of, the woods or anything like that. I do like to ride out in the East Kootenays and stuff like that. I like the fast sand stuff, but oh no, you guys can have Whypress and McLean. I'm good.
Yeah, like a flow. You're like a flowy track or a flowy woods kind of guy then. Like
I like a little bit more wide open than the really technical stuff. With my disability, it probably definitely makes it a little bit harder. You know, to go through the mud and banging through the rocks and stuff like that. It's definitely a bit more of a challenge, but I hate getting wet.
I don't enjoy it either, man. Like, it's terrible. And when it stays in your boots, oh my God. But
yeah, you dab your foot and your foot's soaking wet, and then your socks are mushy and dirty for the rest of the day.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess it's sort of come up, like you mentioned it a couple times, your disability. I was going to hold off on that, but we might as well just sort of talk about that now, because it might set up the next portion of the podcast, like your riding and all that kind of stuff. If that's okay. Yeah. So do you want to introduce yourself, and then
absolutely.
Yeah, because we'll just start from here, like, because our banter's been good so far, so whatever. Other than name dropping Matt, everything's been pretty good.
Perfect.
All right. So yeah, just introduce yourself, Devin.
Yeah, my name is Devin Roshan. I'm 32 years old out of Cochrane, Alberta, and I'm just actually getting back into the riding scene now after taking a bit of a hiatus. I'm excited to be back.
Nice. And like, so the break you took it because of your wife's accident. And was it like severe or just sort of like normal, regular kind of accident?
You know, it was kind of the typical, it's kind of a typical knee injury. She actually had torn the ACL off the bone. Oh. So yeah, it was. You know, I almost wish she just would have broke her leg than ligaments. Right, ligaments are the worst, and I've definitely gone through that. And that was actually the turning point was my wife's accident. Just you know that what are we gonna do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And I guess you couldn't just leave her behind and go riding by yourself?
Yeah, exactly. it was funny because actually, out of all the bikes, it was an XR100 with a bald back tire. And we're just cruising around, kind of like a big family ride out at Kookanoosa Lake there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone's just having a good time. And I was right behind her, and I watched her low side the bike. And you could just see the, you know, that.
Yeah.
The heel all of a sudden was facing upwards, not downwards. Yeah. It's I knew right away what had happened, and it was her first ligament injury, and she was definitely in for the long physio days, the knee braces, and obviously she had to get surgery as well. So
that's crazy.
It was she got a little taste of moto.
Oh, and did she blame you for it?
No, you know what? She actually, she grew up on Vancouver Island, so she had been riding trials bikes and stuff like that quite often. And all through the weekend, you know, she could bank through the rocks or ride in the sand. And, you know, it's not a big bike. I mean, that's the, I think the XR100 is like the farm bike of choice.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Right?
Yeah. And I think it was just a combination of, the bike was too small and the bald back tire. And it was just a combination of we were just messing around and maybe weren't taking it seriously enough.
Yeah.
And obviously that's always when it happens, right? I think that's kind of all injuries in general.
Yeah, I think that, once you no longer respect what's going on or you sort of take it as like, oh, this is sort of just for fun, then like the gates to hell open up. Like,
you know. Yeah, isn't that the truth? Yeah. And that's more or less most of my injuries definitely came from, you know, when you're always feeling just a little too good and you're not really paying attention. And that definitely bit me pretty hard in the U.S. With my severe injury with my leg.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about that. Like, I'll let you just tell me that story.
So I was training down in California. We were doing a pretty extensive training program. And it was Loretta Lynn's regional at, I believe it's called Fox Raceway now. It was Paula Raceway in, it's just south of Temecula. And it was just, it was practice. Everything was really good. And they had these three big tabletops in front of the grandstand. And then it went to like a pretty tight 90.
Okay.
It was a pretty big berm. And I'm trying to remember the guy's name, but anyway, he was on the inside, I was on the outside, and we were just kind of, it was practice, so we weren't pounding too hard, and then the tables could progressively get larger. Okay. And by the time we got to that third table into that corner, the guy on the inside had nowhere to go because we were just hauling, kind of facing each other, and he actually had pushed me up into the corner, and I had nowhere to go but over the berm. And on the other side of this berm there was these, you know, pillow-sized boulders.
Oh, my gosh.
Right on the backside of the berm. And it's kind of a blur now. I kind of try and piece a lot of the story together. The bike had tumbled, I had tumbled, and somehow the handlebar ended up through my leg.
Oh, my.
And I, at the time, I was laying on the, you know, I pulled the bike off me. And I thought I had trolley horsed myself really bad, and I'm laying on my back, and I could pull my hamstring, I could pull my leg into my heel, but I had no, it didn't matter how hard I worked, I couldn't get my heel to basically pull up.
Okay.
And I kept, oh man, I must have really trolley horsed myself really bad. So I'm in shock, not noticing that there's quite a bit of blood everywhere. And even because the handlebar basically hit my patella, exploded my patella, clipped the bottom of my femur, and then it basically bounced all the way through, and it came out of the backside of my leg. And when I pulled it out, it was really wet. I didn't really think much of it. And I obviously in shock, not thinking, I put all my weight on my leg and I just fell to the ground and I was like, oh man, like that was bad. Like that really hurt. Right. Not thinking.
Yeah.
So the track officials come over, medics get there and I think that they can see kind of what's going on. Okay. And I'm still like, oh yeah, you know, I don't know what happened. So my leg is really sore, but you know, get me to my truck. It's like, okay. Yeah. So of course I was by myself down there. My good friend, Chris Brzan, I was basically living with him and he had went back to Canada. So I had nobody. I was down there by myself. And, they get me to my truck and I had a couple of, you know, friends there that I'd met at the track and, like, oh yeah, I know, looking at my leg and like, okay, we're going to cut your boots off. And I'm like, whoa, I'll take them off. Right.
Yeah.
So I take my boots off and I take my time and it's super painful, right? It's kind of starting to come in. And then of course me being the dummy I am, like, you know, I get my gear off and I just got my pants on and they're like, oh, you probably take your pants off. So I take my pants off and now they can see, you know, the trauma that's there.
Yeah.
And again, I can't see yet. Right. And, I actually ended up walking to the ambulance because I was like, no, I don't, I'm fine. Right. Thinking maybe I dislocated my knee, nothing major. And, you know, the medics were a little bit worried and I get into the ambulance and, they start, you know, getting everything all ready. You could see it was kind of like, they're putting like compression and stuff like that all over my leg and they're trying to kind of bandage it up. And I'm like, oh, is it bad? And of course they're like, oh, you know, it's, you did a good job, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of their code word for, yeah, man, you did a number on yourself.
Hands down.
And I ended up getting to the San Diego hospital and, they started asking all these questions and I had Blue Cross at the time. And, I was going through the, yeah, here's my coverage. I'm from Canada, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden they start asking for credit cards. And I'm like, well, what are you looking for credit cards for? Oh, Blue Cross isn't going to cover you because you were picked up at the track. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I get on the horn with good old mom and dad. And, I'm saying, hey, it looks like I've hurt myself pretty bad. They're asking for credit cards. I guess Blue Cross isn't going to cover me. So there's definitely a little bit of panic there. But of course my mom's going, oh, you know, if it was that bad, you know, you wouldn't be calling me. You'd be in so much pain. But I think I was just in such shock and I was kind of mad at the time,
yeah.
That these guys are, you know, it's kind of not like that Canadian healthcare where it's just taken care of. Right.
You bet.
So I go in for x-rays and, the x-ray, the nurse there, she's obviously, you know, taking pictures of my knee and then she starts taking pictures of my hip and taking pictures of my ankle. And I'm like, oh, you know, like, how is my knee looking? And she, you know, the typical answer, well, we can't really, you know, give you, you know, too much, but I can show you the screen. And, so she flips, you know, the monitor around and I go, where is it? And she goes, exactly. So when I had, when I put all my weight on my leg, anything that was held together had basically exploded and the tendons rolled up into my hip and then whatever else was left tried to roll back into my ankle, right down my shin.
Yeah.
So it was, it wasn't a good time. So I was still getting pumped full of morphine at the time. And, I had a friend there that, I had lucky enough had met and, I gave him a call and said, hey, I know that, you really don't know me that well, man. I really need to, you know, get my stuff and I got to go to the airport. So they had my parents had arranged a flight, the next day out of San Diego to get me back up to Canada. So I get loaded full of Vicodin, you know, $25,000 later, we get out of the hospital. And, I'm at my buddy's place and it was definitely a rough night. Wake up the next morning, you know, I'm in the immobilizer and we head off to the San Diego airport. When I got to the airport, it was super quick, painless, rolled right in the flight, you know, even the flight attendants when I got on the plane, I had a coach seat and I was in pretty rough shape. You know, I was just white. I had lost a lot of blood and, it wasn't a good look for me. And I was lucky enough that a gentleman from first class had saw me, you know, hobble in on crutches and the knee immobilizer. He actually had given me a seat, and it was awesome. I had the whole row, and it was definitely an emotional thing. You know, I was like, oh man, I'm going to make it. I'm going to be okay. Cause when I was at the San Diego hospital, you know, the doctors were like, man, you might not make it. You know, like, this is pretty severe. Like, you might not make this. And I was, you know, I'm like, well, I'm not going to spend, you know, they want like $150,000, you know, in for surgery. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'll take my chances. Right. And, you know, you're being all tough guy until you get on the airplane. You're like, oh man, like, I've already gone through a day of this. You know, I just got to get on this plane and, you know, get to Calgary and everything's good. So, you know, I'm trying to hold myself together. And actually it was really awesome. It was the United flight. And, you know, the nurse had actually come in, iced my leg, and she was there the whole time. And I was just trying to hold it together. So I get to Denver's connecting flight, because, of course, there was nothing a direct flight in.
Why would there be?
Yeah, right. Of course. So I roll into Denver, and I'm like, oh, man, home stretch. Like, I'm, you know, I'm going to be good. Everything's going to be fine. And, you know, I get off the plane, and there's no one there. There's nobody with a wheelchair. There's nothing. I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. I'm like asking the flight attendant or the customer service lady at the terminal, you know, I said, hey, I can't walk. I need a wheelchair. She gets me a wheelchair and I basically wheel myself, you know, to the next terminal, and the entire flight's kind of all there. And it looks like the flight leaving San Diego was late and we missed our connecting flight from Denver to Calgary.
Yeah.
I'm like, no way. Like, this isn't happening. This is it. Like, this sucks. So I'm just sitting in the terminal trying to get some food in me. And of course I had now run to the Vicodin. I got no medication and I am in pain. And it had to been, you know, it was definitely, I want to say it was pretty late at night. And I'm literally in the terminal by myself. Like, you know how they kind of got half the light turned off.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there. And you know, it was the most strangest thing, man. I mean, I don't know if you believe in God or not, but there was nobody in this terminal. And from the opposite far end, this old guy walks out, and he's got his his little rolly bag. He's got his flight hat, older gentleman, and he goes, you know, like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I don't even have the energy to talk to you, sir. You know, I'm not trying to be ignorant. I was just so tired and so much pain. And he's like, well, we got to get you taken care of. And I'm like, you know, sure, man, I'm just waiting for my flight for tomorrow. So they, it was a Delta flight. And this guy had to been in his, you know, in his 60s. And he rolls me up to the Delta customer service. And you're a father, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, when you get dad angry?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this guy is getting that angry. You know, I haven't seen a gentleman that mad in a long time. He's screaming at these ladies at customer service. I guess there had been a mix-up. For some reason, everybody on the flight but myself got a Holiday Inn, right? They took everybody to the Holiday Inn but me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this guy's, oh man, you're going to come to my house. I wish I could remember his name. I was just so out of it.
I understand.
And
that.
He had been a Delta pilot for like 40 years. Like, he was a long time pilot, and he's telling me, oh, you're going to come to my house and we'll take care of you. And I was like, dude, I don't want to die. And, you know, at your house, that's the last thing I want is to either go septic or something go wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know, I convinced them, they take me to the Holiday Inn, and it's like midnight, right? It's pretty late. And they put me in this, you know, nice Holiday Inn room. I don't really remember too much of it. I was pretty out of it, but I don't get any sleep whatsoever. And they have to check on me periodically, you know, to make sure that I'm still alive in their hotel room.
Yeah, no doubt.
And and it was, they said that it was pretty bad. I had lost a lot of blood internally. Like, my leg was basically black and blue from, you know, hip to toe, right?
Yeah.
And so obviously we get to the airport the next morning, and I have to go through security. And I have like this whole immobilizer and thing like that on here. And like, you know, my knee is like sticking through. It's all bandaged up in this immobilizer because it's so swollen. And, you know, the security guard goes, you know, we have to take you into the room. And I'm like, oh, okay. And, you know, he's looking around the wheelchair and he goes, he's like poking and prodding at my leg. And I'm like, dude, please don't touch my leg. Like, just don't go near it. It's severely injured. And he goes, well, you got to take the brace off. I'm like, I can't take that off. If I take it off, it's not going to go back on again. Like, I don't think you realize.
Yeah.
He starts getting really rude. And again, I was so out of it. And then another gentleman actually come into the room and was like, hey, man, I think that's enough. You know, let the poor guy go. I'm not going to set the plane on fire. Yeah. And yeah. And then obviously from Denver to Calgary was the worst flight. I had like the, you know, the wall seat from coach to first class.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got like less foot room. Yeah. I had that. It was pretty, I had my leg out in the hallway and like people were hitting my leg and I'm just trying to hold it together. And I get into Calgary, obviously a day late for surgery, and there was my my mom waiting for me at the door, and man, I cried like a little baby. I was like, oh man, I made it! I actually made it, and yeah, and obviously I got into the Rocky View. There's the hospital that we ended up going with, and Dr. O'Brien is this crusty old farm lady. And one of the best surgeons, I think, that we definitely have for kinesiology. And she did a really good job, had to do things a couple of different ways. But I was told I was never going to walk again. They said, that was it, man, you're done. And, and anything that you had for physical activity, you know, you're going to have to do it with one leg. And I'm like, well, great. Now I got, you know, one right arm and now I got no left leg.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, I'm not going to let this happen. Like, this isn't going to be my, you know, the end of my story.
Yeah.
So I was actually working, at Ranchman's on and off when I was, back and forth from California and Calgary, and I actually, operated the mechanical bull there. And, went into work a couple of times just to kind of relax and hang out. And, a couple of my rodeo buddies, you know, were just like, you know, that's it, eh? Like you're done. I said, oh, you know, They say I'm never going to walk again, that's going to be more or less it for me. And even they said, you know, not with your drive, you know, you're going to make it happen. And I basically took a couple months off, had to let the sutures come out and get healed up. And the plan was I was just going to fly down back to California, you know, and pick up my stuff. And that was kind of going to be it. So when I got to California, I picked up my truck, picked up my bike, and Chris Prezan, the guy I was living with, he goes, you know, like, so what's your plan? I said, I'm done. I said, I can't walk. I can't do nothing. He said, you know what? You should go see Dr. Toy. And Dr. Toy is at Murrieta, California, and he's the physio guy for all the big names, you know, Carmichael's jerseys on there, Stewart, Villapoto, you know, he works on in the Dungy, all those guys, all those big names. And I'm like, man, I won't be able to afford this guy. Like, there's gonna be no way this, you know, he's even gonna entertain the idea of me rolling in. So I show up to his clinic and I kind of get a meeting set up with him. I said, listen, they told me I was never gonna walk again. I said, I got nationals in 7 months. Is when Kamloops, right? The first round of the Nationals.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's looking at the x-rays and stuff like that. And then he says, if you show up here every day, but Sunday from 9 a.m. to noon, he says, I'll get you back on the bike. I said, all right. So I started showing up every day. He gave me a wicked deal on, obviously on,
therapy.
On him, you know, on therapy and stuff like that. And man, Barry, I tell you, the worst part of the entire ordeal was the physiotherapy. That was the most painful stuff that I endured, you know, biting rope, just working my leg as much as possible, getting that mobility back. I think I lost more weight at physio than I did riding.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and sure enough, you know, it was a company called Bionic at Paula, because again, I was out there just riding the vet track, just trying to even just get some resemblance of seat time. You know, I can't get my leg, you know, I'm just starting to get my leg up. I can't, you know, they don't get it much past the shroud, and I can't take any impact. I can't jump.
Yeah.
And And there was been some riders that knew about my accident, you know, some older vet guys and this guy, and I apologize to everybody. I forgot everyone's name just because my brain doesn't work anymore. But Bionic was the company, and he was basically developing new style of knee braces that had lockouts for people with injuries. And I said, you know, I heard about your crash. I'd like you to try these. And it was amazing because he could actually lock out the knee brace.
Yeah.
So if I only had 30 degrees of mobility, he can lock it out at 30 degrees. And then you can slowly work it back, right? Till you get to your, you know, your 90 or your 120, whatever your mobility is.
That's insane.
And that was actually what saved my, my knees at multiple times, just, you know, riding around the vet track, just not trying to pull that scar tissue apart or not trying to damage anything. But, yeah, I showed up at Kamloops in 7 months and crashed.
That's awesome.
I showed up at Kamloops. I was racing intermediate for the amateur day, going to try and qualify. And, yeah, crashed in the back stretch. Like just Superman myself in these in this deep whoop section that they had. And I had to take the year off. I had to just kind of relax. And you know what? I did it. I came back and, you know. And that was good enough.
That's insane. So like,
yeah, it was quite the experience.
When you were in physio, I guess like, when he offered you hope, I guess we'll just look at it like that. Like, mm-hmm. How did that make you feel? Like there's everybody else told you that you'd never be able to walk. And this guy said he's going to get you back on the bike within 7 months. Like,
yeah, I mean, it definitely did give me hope, man. It was, one of those things where, yeah, you get told no. And even in my mind, you know, I had still gone down and, you know, even my parents were like, you know, you shouldn't come back. And you know, when I told them I wasn't coming back, there was definitely some angry phone calls, but, you know, yeah, that was basically my, I think in reality, it probably, you know, he saved my life. If I didn't get that help, I don't think that I'd have a totally different, you know, outlook for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I could see how. Like, I don't know. If everything went to shit, so to speak, I could just see how you'd be pretty gloomy. You know, like,
yeah.
Not being able to walk, not being able to ride. Yeah. Like for anybody that would suck. Like,
well, yeah, and you know, it's me already as a disability, and you know, walking into and now I get another one. Like, yeah. Oh man, right? So, but no, it yeah, I mean, I was super thankful that you know, that you put in the, you got to put in the work for sure. You know, that's one of those things I've always believed in, is that if you don't put in the work, you know, it's not going to happen. It's never going to be given to you.
That's fair. So with your disability, like you have one full arm and then like, I don't know how to describe your other arm. It's your right arm, right?
Yeah, so I was born this way, so yeah. I was super lucky. Basically my right arm, you know, I actually pull my sleeve up here just to it's, I would probably say, you know, after the elbow I got about 3 or 4 inches.
Okay.
So I got it, like, I guess you call it kind of a hook. So I still have my elbow. I have full dexterity in the way I can bend my elbow, just like you'd be able to bend like your forearm.
Yeah.
So for me riding, I have the throttle on the left. So I basically take the cables. I flip the cables around. I cut all the steel, like the throttle stops out of the tube.
Yep.
And then basically make the throttle twist the other way. It gets stuck all the time. It's amazing. And then, I have a clutch master cylinder from a KTM, that's a Brembo.
Okay.
For my front brake. And then I use a clutch override from the Cruz. So with my brand new bike, obviously the way things are right now, you know, the clutches are so hard to get. I've had one on order for a few months, but it's nice to have that option. But I rode for a long time with no front brake or anything like that. It was just a rear brake and a clutch. But now that they've designed that style, it definitely was a big game changer for me, for sure.
No doubt. And so, like, how did you get into dirt biking to begin with? Like, you know, having one, having a disability with your arm, didn't anybody try to tell you that was crazy?
You know what? My parents were always into, you know, that outdoor. My dad and my mom are both right from the farm. And, you know, for them, there was no excuse, right? You just, that's the card you've been dealt with, and, you know, you deal with it. So, you know, we were always, we were doing a lot of pasture stuff with cattle out an area called the Picture Valley Ranch. And I had a little 50cc quad at the time. And I just ride the wheels off this thing. When my dad had put the thumb throttle on the other side, you know, just kind of made it work for me on the other. And I just start burning laps around the farm. And I just was good at it. So it was one of those things where if you're good at something, I guess, you know, you kind of push your kids to get a little better. And yeah, it was basically from there, it was all two wheels.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was super lucky. You know, my parents had always, you know, you obviously you get parents, you know, how does your kid do it? Well, it's no different to him. He just does it, right? You know, we get, I help a lot of, I used to help a lot of veterans, you know, how do you cut steak? You know, well, you have to use what you have, right? You know, I use my stub to hold the fork, and I use the knife on my good hand. And, you know, this whole entire world is designed for people with two opposable thumbs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just got to figure it out. I mean, it's so different, and it's so hard for a lot of these companies, and, you know, especially with prosthesis, everybody is so different. We used to do a thing called extremity games. It's when all the adaptive riders get together, and there's actually one, an event out at Ontario at Moto Park, and it was a fantastic, but you get to see all these different setups. You know, you got Jim Wozni, he's got no right leg, I believe. Okay. And you know, you got Doug Henry, he's paralyzed. You got Harold Gleason, he also has one arm. And you know, you get to see, you know, he modifies it so different than I do. So it's so hard to you know, kind of get information, because everybody is going to do it different.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to ride different than so-and-so is going to ride. You know, every setup is going to be that little bit
different,
you know, more unique. Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah. The one that freaks me out is just like, the one photo of you, you're probably like 20 feet in the air jumping. I just can't, like, I don't know, wondering how you land the jump, like, with all the, I guess, torques or the impact on the front. Like, if you fuck up, it's like a fuck up.
Oh yeah. You know what's way worse is whoops, man. I hated whoops. I could always in that attack position. So with me, I'm always over the bar, so I'm always in that that attack position.
Yeah.
You know, you're on the balls of your feet, and I can still get back. I rode 450s for basically my, you know, my junior intermediate, starting with MX3 and stuff like that. Then went down to the 250, and the 450 actually helped me in the big rollers, because you had so much power to get that bike on the back tire.
Yep.
But yeah, going to the 250s, it was definitely, you had to carry, you know, I learned to carry so much more speed, you know, into those sections so that I could weight transfer my bike backwards to not take that shock.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, you know, you ride a bike with your legs, you don't ride a bike with your hands, right?
No, I understand.
So that's definitely, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, you're squeezing so hard to hold yourself up, but yeah, when you screw up, it definitely hurts. You definitely eat that bar pad pretty hard.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, it's not like we wrestle the bike to stay straight. It wants to stay straight. It's just like when it's getting deflection and things like that. I'm just imagining holding on just below my elbow, like how incredibly difficult it could be at speed, like in a racing set, like. Because, I mean, as a casual rider, you can just take it as you want. But when you're racing, you really have to push yourself. So it's just, right now, my mind's trying to piece it all together, I guess.
We'll have to go riding. We'll go to the track, though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure, you get the advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I got to take what I can get, man.
Yeah, fair enough, right? Like, I don't know if you've ever seen me ride, but it's not pretty. I'm not very graceful.
That's okay. Neither am I. It's all, as long as you're having fun, that's all you need.
100%.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky to travel all over with Walt Healy back in the day. That was a great dealership to ride for. And then I got on with, before Pro-Am was now Jack Carter. You know, they actually took really good care of me, and went to Kawasaki Racing Champions out at New Jersey, and went to a bunch of different states. Went to Texas, Arizona, and obviously a lot of time in California, and got to meet some really cool people, and you know, and got really set up with some really big manufacturers. It was definitely a blessing for me. You know, I would say having a disability, because people are definitely like, well, man, you know, the guy's ripping, and you know, he's got his issues, so they definitely wanted their you know, their name on my setup. So I was pretty lucky that way.
I could see that. Like, yeah, I could see that. Them trying to like ride your coattails instead of you trying to ride theirs.
Yeah. Oh, we got to put in the work, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's not for free. Like, there's a lot of seat time to just get the attention, or the right kind of attention, where people are going to want to put their name on your bike. And
yeah,
that's
insane. Well, it's funny. When I first moved, you know, when Kim went down to California in my first years, I lived up in, I don't know if you know the area really well. Do you know where like Anna Lano is, or like San, you know, where San Bernardino is?
No. Oh, I know where San Bernardino is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I lived actually up top of the hill in a little town called Phelan. And Glen Helen was right down the road, and there was a weekend super series that they had. And it was the, you know, the, I guess they call it the vet track or whatever. Glen Helen is so nasty. It's so hard to ride.
Yeah.
And I just kind of shown up and raced. I believe I was racing the B class, and Mr. Troy Lee himself just came up to me and said, "Hey man, you're doing a great job. Come, you know, come see me at the shop." I'm like, "Who is this guy?" And I'm looking at the business card, and I'm like, Troy Lee. I'm like, "Oh, damn." it was crazy, right? You see all these people that, you know, you only hear about. And definitely cool experience. If I can give anyone advice, go and ride down south. It's definitely, the tracks are better. Everything is just, everything's so well maintained, put together really nice. You know, up here, it's definitely, as I believe Jared, Mr. Stock said, you know, it's not that great up here.
Well, I don't know. I think it's pretty nice, but I guess I haven't really experienced in the States. And I mean, you imagine though, like population and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot more money at those tracks than there is at our tracks.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Yeah, and they do a great job here as well. You know, even I know my shop. I literally, I'm next door to the track, so I get to see it every day as it taunts me. But yeah, it definitely looks like they put some good work in.
How was that? You know, you're on hiatus, and then all you can smell is race fuel and hear dirt bikes when you're at work. Like, was that nagging?
Yeah, you know, it really was, man. It was, you know, one of those things, you know, the worst was on the weekends during the summertime, right? Because they got their, you know, their super series or you know, they got their regional events and stuff like that are at the track, and you can hear the gates and guys are just pounding motos in. And I'm like, oh man, that was such a good time.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I grabbed my leg and I broke my collarbone. So I'm like grabbing that. And I'm like, oh man, you know, this really hurts.
It's like, yeah. Well, the riders who've been around for a while are pretty broken. Like, I don't know. Everybody I talked to, they could list off like a long list of injuries and things. So I guess it just comes with the sport.
Oh yeah. It is definitely a young man's game. That's for sure. I'm 32, man, and I mean, everyone's, "Oh, you're so young." I'm like, I don't feel young.
You're an old man by in the culture of dirt bikes.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
I'm 46. I'll be 47 this summer. It makes me old. And then there's guys.
No, you just broke in.
I know. And there's guys a lot older than me, so I don't know that there's really. I think there's just two ages. There's like, you're a young rider, and then you're an old rider, and it could happen.
Yeah, there really is no in between, right? Because it's like you got your kids and you're trying to make the mortgage payment. You're like, you know, I don't want to go hard. Yeah. Or it's the you know, gonna, I'm out here 6 days a week, kind of motos in.
Yeah, it's oh man, it's so varied. It's insane. It's off road. What's your Instagram handle?
My Instagram handle is Off Road Brigade.
That's right. Yeah, and then. So is that like a full on company?
So it started off as you know, just a group, and then we really started hitting it really hard with Alberta Parks. Conversations you've had before is that we you know, we're just losing land like crazy, and I've been fighting the good fight for a long time, and it's always, you know, the red tape is everywhere. But we do basically two trail cleanups a year. We do one in the spring at McLean Creek, and then we do one at the fall in Wipers. We basically go and we get, you know, usually 30 or 40 yard bins donated, and we'll fill it. You know, we try and go all the campsites, clean all the garbage up from all the weekend warriors and stuff like that. It's pretty sad state that our trails are in, just because, you know, especially with COVID, you know, we had these people that had never been out to the woods before and they had no other activities to do. And the, just the respect of our lands was just, you know, taken for granted for sure. So it was definitely some of the worst we've seen the last couple of years, but, yeah, my club basically takes, you know, modified trucks, stock trucks. We do, you know, a lot of events with people that are just getting into the off-road sport. And with me, it was with age, get a cage kind of thing. So once I stopped racing, it was, you know, kind of, I still wanted to enjoy the backcountry and get out there. And I felt like a lot of people had that same desire, whether they were just getting into it or they've been doing it for a long time and they just wanted buddies to go with.
Yeah.
And we basically, yeah, just turn it into, you know, a stewardship group where we just want to try and give back to the community as much as we can to try and preserve our trails, you know, and try and hold proper etiquette. Like we were saying at the beginning of this, you know, Mother Nature is a cruel, cruel mistress. And we do a lot of rescues and recoveries. And the dead of winter, you know, people think that they got a level kid on their Tacoma and they're, you know, they're ready to go, right? And yeah. Especially out in your area, I mean, Exshaw, and that, you know, the Rocky Mountains there, it the weather can just change so quick. You know, one minute it's super nice and sunny, and then the next minute, man, it's, you know, you're in a full whiteout and the drifts are going over, or you got ice dams and stuff like that in the river valleys. It can get pretty nasty for sure.
Yeah. Well, ice dams are insane. Like, especially if they let go, like,
yeah. Like, yeah, we get them a lot in the spring down that river valley, and it'll catch a lot of people off guard. Yeah. You know, they, I can see the bottom, right? But it's, usually not the case.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a lot deeper than it looks. Like,
yeah. Well, big time. Big
people
time.
Who do, I remember a friend of mine, he purchased a Jeep. It was pretty set up. And then, he tried to do a river crossing, and it started to float.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just like, oh, God damn. And
it
wasn't even his. Like, it was his wife's. And then, like, so he caught some traction and then got out on the other side. But he was just, like, about to give up. You know, like, that's it. It's just gone. Like, that fast.
There goes your investment, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was, like, 35 grand or something at the time, so... It's a lot of money.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of people out there now. I mean, obviously, when it comes to the short, you know, the used vehicle shortage or new vehicle shortage, I guess you could say, with everything that's happening, that people are taking a lot of brand new vehicles. I mean, they have all the bells and whistles, so it definitely makes you know, the newbie a rock star. You know, when it comes to the vehicle, basically drives you. You don't have to drive it, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely helped the sport out in the way of getting more eyes on it. We just got to try and get the right eyes.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, at least you guys, you know, the available secondhand parts is going to be picking up pretty good.
Like, yeah, that's the business I'm in now, right? I'm the general manager there at Four Wheel Parts in Calgary. And, you know, getting tires, getting, you know, anything that's like coil springs, for example, are super hard to come by. A lot of tires are a year out. I'm sure it's kind of the same in the power sports industry. I mean, I've been waiting months for my clutch to show up, but yeah. It's the same in the automotive industry. You know, the getting anything right now is just a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. It's inflating all the pricing. Like, everything just seems to be insane. Like, forget about, you know, the inflation that's taking place globally. Like, the motorsports inflation has been well ahead of that. When you could sell COVID bikes for almost retail because they were available, like, just insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it's yeah hopefully you know, we're gonna see a change soon, but I think we're definitely in for a long, I think we're in for the long haul.
Yeah, that's fair. So one of the things with McLean Creek, you made the news for that, scoring a victory for off-road community. I think it was CBC or CTV. I can't recall now. How did that?
Yep.
How did that happen? What was the victory?
I think the biggest thing was shedding light that you know, it's not the enthusiasts that are the problem. You know, it's not the, you know, the clubs or the people that are really into the hobby. You know, we're working really hard because we don't want to lose anymore. It was the the biggest thing that we run into is the weekend warriors, the people that don't have the proper trail etiquette, you know, and we just get labeled as the problem, right? Oh, you're the problem. You know, you have the dirt bikes, you have the trucks, you have the ATVs, you know, and you're the issue. When really, you know, it's the people in the minivans that are piling their, you know, six of their kids, and they go out for a picnic, and there's just destruction everywhere. You know, they don't understand how to, you know, properly cut trees down, or you know, or don't burn live trees, or, you know, pick up your garbage. And unfortunately, as much as I hate to say it, because I'm a huge gun enthusiast myself, but recreational shooting is another huge problem. You know, we pick up so much brass and shotgun shells, and it's the unfortunate part. I mean, I get it. You know, people want to go out there and have a good time, but you got to pick up after yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was our big victory, was just showing that, you know, it's not the recreate, you know, or I should say, it's not the enthusiasts, sorry, that, you know, that are the, you know, the issues. If you see a big Jeep or a big Toyota, you know, usually a big truck, that guy has spent $60,000 to $80,000 on outfitting his vehicle to go and enjoy the backcountry, you know, and then you get a guy, you know, who's just has nowhere to go, but he can get his Prius pretty far back there, and then, you know, he camps, gets wasted with his buddies, and leaves his tent there, right?
Yeah. That one shits me, when they leave behind their tent, or the pretty much the whole camp. Like, and then, yeah, last year, I feel like the biggest thing that was disturbing me was just people using the river as, like, a bathroom, and, like, leaving everywhere.
Yeah, we clean up so many bathrooms in the woods, man. People put shower curtains up, and I'm like, oh, it's disgusting.
There needs to be a sign just off the 40 there, you know, like, take only pictures, leave only footprints kind of sign. Just remind people that they got to pack out what they pack in.
My personal opinion, is that the only way to stop that from happening, any, you know, more or less the garbage in general, is that they have to put trail filters in. You know, they got to make it so it's, you know, if you want to go ice climbing, you got to buy the gear, right?
Yeah.
If you want to go dirt biking, you got to buy the gear. Well, if you want to go camping, you know, you got to buy the gear. So I think that if you want to go into our backcountry, you know, if there's a, you know, a flat gravel road, that's usually where the main garbage is, because, you know, the guy can get his Prius in there.
Yeah.
You know, college kids or high school kids with their Honda Civics and going out for a bush party. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I had my fair share of bush parties, but I always remember that we cleaned up after ourselves than, you know, just leaving things everywhere, right?
We used to clean it all up because we didn't want the place to be discovered.
Yeah, right? That's the last thing you want to is to lose your spot.
Yeah. That's right. Leave no trace, because then there's no evidence. That was pretty much our mentality. And then it would always be there. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. So I think if they, you know, I've been working with Alberta Parks, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, it has been, I wouldn't say it's a losing battle, but it is, it's tough, man. I think the biggest issue that we run into is that not everybody wants to work together.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the, you know, you got the dirt bike guys, the ATV guys, and truck guys. And for some reason, you know, nobody wants to work together, right? It's always kind of clicky kind of thing, which is really too bad. I know BC does it really well. There's a couple of associations out there that just have huge member groups, and they've changed their, you know, their entire trail system. They have full access to everything. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's definitely some areas that they have, you know, their issues with when it comes to gates or loss of access, but it's definitely hard here. There's definitely some big hurdles to jump into.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of us guys and girls riding dirt bikes having to deal with the mess you guys in four wheels make. Like,
yeah. Well, that's the thing. I don't want nothing to do with your single track. I just want the big rocks.
No doubt. No doubt. I couldn't imagine, like, yeah, trying to take a Tacoma through some of the single track spaces and having a good time. Like,
yeah, I know it doesn't happen. That's definitely not a thing.
And it's hilarious when we try to ride our stuff on the four track. Like, it's just weird. Some of the holes
it's totally
so
different.
Deep. Like, yeah, every time, like in McLean, using the truck trails to get, like, from one section to another or what have you. Whenever I see water, I just imagine it's a total bike depth. Like, how deep is that going to be? Or
Yeah, I know. You know the trail, East Fisher.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's the nasty one. I don't even go in there, and you know, unless you got a minimum tire size of a 44.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually a bad time.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I guess I'll wrap that up here. We're just about an hour, and I'll just. Is there anything you want to say, or anybody you want to shout out to, just here at the end?
No, Mesh, thank you so much for, you know, giving me the opportunity to talk with you, and we'll definitely have to put some laps in for sure.
Absolutely, and thanks for coming on the show. Like, you'll be my first episode for this season, so there's a lot of folks who are happy to hear from you, I'm sure of that. All right, I can just hit stop.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.